Support for this podcast comes from the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, presenting A Frame of Mind, a new podcast taking a look at race in America through the lens of the museum's past, present, and future. Available now wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at nelson-atkins.org.
This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Scientists and health professionals are scrambling to learn more about long COVID, a mysterious variant of the coronavirus that can debilitate those who contract it for months and even years. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised that COVID has produced a class of long haulers, as they're called. One of our guests today points out that the virus just blows up the immune system. The good news is that researchers are making headway. Now a rundown on exactly what they've learned and what more they need to figure out. With us, Dr. Gary Salzman is a pulmonologist with the University Health in Kansas City and the UMKC School of Medicine. Dr. Salzman, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Stephen Deeks is also joining us. He's a professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Deeks, good morning to you as well.
Hello, everybody.
Dr. Deeks, why do some people get long COVID and so many others skate by?
To be honest, we have no idea. We have a lot of theories, and I'm happy to get into them. But at this point in time, we're just beginning to just describe the syndrome, just to sort of figure out what people are experiencing. And once we've sort of done that, then we can begin to do these type of intensive studies to figure out what's going on.
What's one theory that you have that might be sort of towards the top of the list?
Well, as you said, you know, that SARS-CoV-2, the virus, when it infects a person, has a profound effect on the health of the immune system. It's a very inflammatory process. And as a consequence, the immune system, you know, struggles to deal with the virus. But as a consequence of all that, it becomes quite dysfunctional. And some of the stuff that the immune system does that we think might be beneficial can also cause collateral damage. And some of this damage can persist indefinitely, and some of that inflammatory process can contribute to some of the syndromes that we're seeing. So that's a leading hypothesis. There's others.
Dr. Salzman, what percentage of people infected with COVID wind up experiencing long-term effects?
It's about 10 to 20% of patients that have had COVID develop persistent or recurrent symptoms.
That's a lot of people, Dr. Salzman.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and it's and these people are really concerned about this, and they're trying to get help, and it's difficult to find doctors that are able and willing to help them.
Is it more common for people in certain demographic groups?
Women seem to have a little bit higher rate than men. People in lower socioeconomic groups also tend to be affected more, but I think that, you know, it's a relatively common thing that we need to address.
Dr. Deeks, how concerned are patients who are suffering from long COVID about the Omicron variant that's now sort of so much in the news?
Well, there are two questions there. So people who have long COVID, I'm not aware of any data that getting reinfected is necessarily going to cause more harm or more symptoms. But the bigger question, the more societal question, since basically I think everybody eventually is going to get infected with this virus, Omicron or the next variant, the question is, are these newer variants going to cause long COVID? And to be honest, we have no idea.
So you're saying that you think eventually we're all going to get it?
You know, this is an ongoing debate. You know, what's the... is this truly going to be endemic, you know, like the cold viruses and the flu viruses, in which case they bounce around from person to person for years. Eventually someone gets it. That's sort of the trend right now. So, yeah, that might in fact be what's going to happen. But there is some early signs that these variants are becoming less and less virulent, less able to cause disease, perhaps also less able to cause long COVID.
Dr. Salzman, maybe I'm looking for a different answer here. Do you think we're all going to get it eventually?
I agree. I do think that it's going to be endemic, like the flu and the common cold. You know, the coronavirus is in the same family as the common cold, and that may, you know, end up resolving the pandemic and turning it into just what we see usually with the common cold and flu. So this may be, you know, starting to be the end of the pandemic.
Hmm. Dr. Salzman, what about these symptoms I read about, like, you know, brain fog and chest pain and nausea and anxiety for those who suffer from long COVID? Are any of these more common than the others? What are you seeing out there?
I think fatigue has been the most common thing we're seeing, also a brain fog, chronic loss of taste and smell, and then as a lung doctor, I'm seeing a lot of people with cough and shortness of breath. So those are some of the most common symptoms, and they can persist or they can go away and then they can come back. But, you know, every patient is individual, and they have, you know, their own unique signs and symptoms, and we try to treat them, you know, as individuals and treat their specific symptoms.
Dr. Deeks, can you contract long COVID from the Omicron variant, or does it just come from the Delta variant, or, again, do you have any idea yet?
Well, long COVID, by definition, requires having symptoms for basically more than 3 to 4 months. Omicron's not been around long enough for us to figure that out.
Mm. So everything we know about long COVID right now appears to be stemming from the Delta variant.
And the earlier variants. So it's really the first generation, actually. What happened in early 2020, in our experience, was where we've seen the most severe cases. But certainly with Delta, we've seen some long COVID.
Hmm. What have you found in your research, Dr. Deeks, about the causes of long COVID? Anything more that you can shed light on there?
Well, there's this issue of chronic inflammation. There's also a concern that the virus in some people doesn't go away and it persists in tissues and causes local damage. There's also a concern that it's causing these mini blood clots in various different tissues, and that's causing damage. You know, and it's also there's also a theory that basically the immune system is taken over by whatever the virus did, and the immune system starts attacking very specific tissues. So lots of possibilities, lots of potential therapies as a consequence. But this idea, you know, we're right now at that point where we're just beginning to try to figure out the next steps.
You know, maybe a morbid question, Dr. Deeks, but when you contract long COVID, I mean, how many of those folks wind up dying from it?
I'd be curious what Dr. Salzman says about that. We've seen some unexplained deaths in people after COVID, but people dying from long COVID directly, that's not something that we've seen very much of.
Dr. Salzman, what do you say to that?
No, I would agree. This is chronic and debilitating, but most people are not going to die of it. And oftentimes they can't get back to work. They can't get back to their normal level of functioning before they had COVID. So it's more of a chronic disease, but it's not really causing people to die, no.
Dr. Salzman, when did the world of health sciences first discover this scourge of long COVID? Where did that come from?
So it was, you know, in 2020, when 2021, when the disease first started, you know, the first people that were getting it, you know, 3 to 4 months after they had it, we were starting to see people that had chronic problems. So, you know, it was, you know, about 3 or 4 months after the pandemic started that we were seeing people that were infected early that were starting to have these chronic symptoms.
Once you get it, and you suffer from long COVID, is it true you'll eventually get rid of it, Dr. Salzman? It'll eventually work its way out of your system?
Some people do get better over time. In my experience, at about 6 months, we start people start getting better. The other thing that I've seen is people that have not been vaccinated that have long COVID, when they get vaccinated, some of those people, it resolves their symptoms. It may be the residual virus that they have. The vaccine eliminates that, and some of those patients will get better after they're vaccinated. So I do strongly recommend that people to get vaccinated, both to try to deal with their post-COVID symptoms and also to prevent, another infection.
Dr. Salzman, what does that portend then for this situation of long COVID? If some people get the vaccine and actually they can improve, does that suggest something, maybe an answer going forward?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it may be that there's some residual virus that's in the tissues and the vaccine, you know, eliminates that. That's certainly a possibility, but vaccination is good for many reasons, but it certainly may improve post-COVID symptoms, and so that is strongly recommended, yeah.
Dr. Deeks, aren't there various types of long COVID? Can you run them down for us? What different strains or different brands there might be out there?
There are definitely different flavors. There's different subsets. Some people get this, the neurocognitive stuff about, you know, their ability to sort of concentrate, the brain fog issue. Some of this is associated with the inability to smell. So there's this kind of the neurologic group. There's a cardiopulmonary sort of syndrome as well with people who have a rapid heart rate or the blood pressure doesn't actually respond accordingly and so forth. You know, and there's another sort of subset that people have these more disabling, less, more systemic kind of chronic fatigue, this post-exertional malaise type of syndromes. And there's a very unique one called POTS that we're very interested in, because that one we can treat. And that one is an issue in which the heart rate goes up really fast when people sort of begin to have some activity. And that's one of the few versions of long COVID that actually has a therapy. So multiple different syndromes. And as Dr. Salzman said, they can wax and wane. So people can have good periods and bad periods and so forth.
No, Dr. Deeks, is hearing you describe these things with Dr. Salzman, it just sounds awful. I mean, maybe I'm almost surprised that this form of the coronavirus hasn't gotten more attention, because what you're describing makes me want to run for the hills.
Well, it certainly would make me want to run for a vaccine. You know, people in the media and even in the scientists, when they talk about getting COVID, they really talk about their risk of being hospitalized and dying. And, you know, particularly with Omicron, those risks are quite low. But no one wants long COVID, and because this can be quite disabling. And the only way to sort of deal with that is to get vaccinated, because clearly people who are vaccinated are less likely to become infected. And if they do become infected, they're far less likely to get long COVID.
You know, in one of your studies, doctor, you found that chronic inflammation caused by the COVID infection could be one of the causes of long-term symptoms here. Can you speak more about that and what you're talking about there in layman's language for our listeners?
You know, chronic inflammation is, you know, the immune system basically turns on the body and begins to sort of cause some harm or destruction in various tissues. We've known for decades that chronic inflammation contributes to heart disease and cancer and so forth. So it's not too surprising. And many of the people who have long COVID have symptoms that are very similar to these rheumatologic diseases, you know, like lupus and various arthritis, which are really inflammatory diseases. So there's a lot of reason to believe that the immune system and inflammation can be a major cause and a focus of treatment.
You started a study in April of 2020 on the long-term impact of infection with COVID. How is that study progressing?
Well, in April 2020, right, when we first began to realize that there was the potential, we had no idea what was happening at that time, but we knew from other infections that some people may have long-term issues. So we basically decided, we had a big HIV cohort that we had to shut down because of COVID. And we just repurposed that and just started following people who had COVID to see what happened over time. And, you know, we have about 400 people in the cohort. We're doing a lot of really deep, deep investigation. The study's going well. And now we're joining a big NIH national. And Congress recently devoted over $1 billion to the study of this syndrome. And we are going to be participating in that national sort of Manhattan Project approach to trying to figure out what's going on and what to do about it.
Can you give me a sense, Dr. Salzman, in the medical world, I assume there's research and studies, as Dr. Deeks is referring to, those things are going on all over the country all the time right now. Can you give me a lay of the land of that just a little bit?
You know, I think that what we're finding is that there's multiple etiologies. There's multiple issues that people have. Everyone doesn't have the same thing. And so it's not just one syndrome, it's multiple syndromes. And I think that the important thing is each patient has to be individually evaluated and determine what is actually going on with them. But I think the research is still preliminary. And a lot of us practicing physicians are just trying, you know, trying whatever tools we have in our bag to try to deal with these patients. And sometimes they're just basically support things like exercise and rehab and mental health, you know, counseling and that type of thing, or treating their underlying diseases, their asthma or their COPD, and trying to optimize what we can treat. So the research, I think, is still preliminary, and we, you know, still have a long way to go.
Dr. Deeks, you mentioned this Manhattan-style project underway. How many medical professionals are participating? Where are they located around the country?
Well, this is a research study. It's a big cohort. We're going to enroll people from all over the country. There's probably 100 different centers in the country. We're trying to make sure that we access everybody at risk in an equal manner. And so that is the first step, and that's happening now. And once we get people into this cohort, we're going to be doing these really deep dive, extensive assessments of what's happening throughout the body. And from that, we hope to get ideas in terms of various different mechanisms that we can intervene with therapy. But the first step is to enroll this big national cohort.
Let's go to some calls. And Jesse from Shawnee. Jesse, good morning.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay. Wow, that's amazing. Okay. Again, I was one that had COVID back in March 2020 when it came out. I was not hospitalized, but I couldn't get a test. And not until 3 months later did I, you know, got the antibody test and confirmed that I had COVID. I had antibodies up until February that I've been donating convalescent plasma. And the question that you, I think one of the talkers was mentioning, that fatigue was the most largest symptom for long-haul COVID, and I've had the fatigue that I've never had before until I had the vaccine. I'm still suffering from tinnitus, that it got worse after COVID. And then even after the vaccine, it still persists. And so the question I had is, you know, is it more of a mental type issue for people that are not used to dealing with these symptoms? You know, that the case of the guy that owned the Texas Roadhouse, that he, you know, committed suicide after getting tinnitus. So, you know, so I'd like to, you know, to see if there's any response to that.
Dr. Salzman, the mental stress that long haulers have to endure, like Jesse, talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think that there is a huge mental stress. And, you know, some of it is patients are not being believed. They're thinking other people are telling them it's all in your head or it's made up. But this is real. It's absolutely real. And there is help out there. You know, we have a Center for COVID Recovery Clinic that we're seeing patients, and we're dealing with that. And part of that is addressing their mental health and trying to get them through the stress of this chronic illness, because chronic illness puts a big stress on people, and we do try to address that as well as address their physical symptoms. So I think that the mental health part is very, very important and needs to be addressed.
Jesse, did you have some problems with doctors believing you to begin with?
Yeah, no, I think in the beginning, since it was kind of new, I, you know, had to contact my, you know, primary care physician. And since I wasn't admitted to the hospital, he just said, well, just, you know, stay at home, recover, just take Tylenol, Robitussin, and vitamin C. And then I had 2.5 weeks of, you know, the symptoms. I recovered at home. And I, you know, I will say that I really thought I was going to die. You know, that's, you know, I was already preparing. What will I tell my family and all that? So, you know, in terms of this being real or not, yeah, I think that was, you know, a big scare right there. And then the long hauls, it was, you know, afterwards that I started, you know, having the phantom smells that started smelling the cigarette smokes, you know, months after that, and then I also went to a cardiologist, you know, that my heart seemed to be racing. And so I had that checked out.
Wow.
So I think you get certain doctors that says that, you know, it wasn't that much of a big deal,
right?
But then they said that they, you know, so now I was concerned, was there any kind of heart damage? I think I was fortunate that a lot of the long haulers that I know, you know, that had certain issues that couldn't return back to work, I was able to do that.
Right.
I was fortunate.
Well, I appreciate the phone call here, Jesse. Dr. Deeks, he raises a couple questions here. This notion of phantom smells, I had not heard that expression before. What's Jesse talking about?
You know, I'm not sure that we have an answer to that. That is definitely part of the syndrome. Everything he described is really textbook long COVID. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have really no grand theory on how to explain all these various different symptoms, some of them quite unusual. But the fact that, you know, thousands of people, maybe hundreds of thousands of people are having these types of symptoms, you know, provides the proof that this is real. Mm-hmm. And that's important. Because I think, as Dr. Salzman mentioned, there's been a lot of stigma associated with this. And that can really be bad for one's health, really wear one out. And the fact that I think now that the biomedical system is basically saying, hey, this is real, removes a lot of stigma. And that in itself is somewhat beneficial.
The stigma being what? That if you contract long COVID, there's, you know, something wrong with you, doctor? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you know, this is, we've been dealing with these types of post-infectious complications, like chronic Lyme, you know, Lyme disease. And a lot of doctors right. have always sort of thought that this is just people who are depressed and they need antidepressants and it has nothing to do with the infection. That was very common before COVID about these types of issues and very common early, like in 2020. But I think now in early 2022, there's pretty much broad consensus among everybody involved that this is real.
That's
a very important progress.
Dr. Salzman, this idea that some medical professionals have been dubious at long haulers and the symptoms they're experiencing, do you think the medical profession has largely moved past that?
I think they have. I think there's a lot of physicians that really don't have any idea what to do with these people and are just at a loss, and which is, you know, why I think that it's important for them to go to a specific clinic for COVID long haulers so they can get physicians that are experienced in dealing with this, because I think that really many physicians don't have any idea how to evaluate or treat this problem.
Yeah. We have a question here, Dr. Deeks, from Allison on Twitter, at KCUR, up to date. She's asking, with what your guest said about vaccinations improving symptoms, does this mean future boosters may improve symptoms in long COVID sufferers?
There are a number of studies that do suggest that the vaccine given after developing long COVID can help. And there's a biologic reason for why that might be. And so we certainly do support getting the boosters according to recommendations.
She also asked, Dr. Deeks, is there any research on the COVID antiviral drug knocking out the lingering symptoms?
That's an outstanding question. You know, this idea that the vaccines can make people better suggests that there might be some virus lingering around causing these symptoms. And that does suggest that if we give people with these types of issues antivirals to reduce the amount of virus in the body, that could help. So that needs to be studied. We have no data right now.
Dr. Salzman, Lynn on Twitter wants to know a little more about what therapies are currently being used to treat long COVID.
So it really depends a lot about on what signs or symptoms they have. You know, what we're doing in our COVID recovery clinic is trying to look at what underlying diseases they have and trying to treat them. We know that at least in patients that have had a history of asthma or family history of asthma, that COVID may exacerbate that. And treating them for asthma oftentimes improves their respiratory problems. And so, you know, we try to look at what other issues that they're having and seeing that we can treat the things that we can treat. In certain cases of inflammation of the lung, we're using anti-inflammatory medications to decrease inflammation in their lung to try to improve their shortness of breath and cough. So those are some of the things we're doing with the respiratory. The fatigue and the fogginess, you know, seems to respond pretty well to exercise and rehabilitation. And so a lot of these people get into an exercise rehabilitation program, and that appears to be helpful. So those are just a few things that we do. But we try to look at each patient individually and try to come up with a specific plan for them. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Deeks, maybe as we wrap up here, what should someone who's still experiencing the effects of COVID, what should they do moving forward?
Well, if they can find a doctor like Dr. Salzman who has this holistic approach.
Right.
Who understands, you know, the biology, understands the issues of stigma, understands what's happening in the research, then that's ideal. But the problem is that these long COVID clinics, there's long waiting times, they're not well funded, you know, they're not every institution has one, people are really struggling to get into them. So I actually do think that we need a national initiative to sort of build up these clinics throughout the country and make sure that they're available to everybody, not just those who can afford sort of to go to these clinics. And so that I think is necessary. We need to get people into these long COVID clinics so they can begin to talk to other people, access research studies, get the rehabilitation, and so forth. That's key.
Well, I don't know about anybody else listening to this, but the notion that vigilance is still needed when it comes to COVID, it certainly impressed upon me the last 25 minutes here. You just heard the voice of Dr. Stephen Deeks, a professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Gary Salzman also joined us, a pulmonologist with the University Health in Kansas City and the UMKC School of Medicine. Gentlemen, thank you both for sharing your expertise with us. Very much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.